come join me May 1st through the 6th so that you can rest, rediscover your strengths, reconnect with yourself and those physicians like you who are ready to leave work at work, and re-energize. This is the invitation for you to make 2023 your year. Join me in Costa Rica in this really amazing, non-judgmental, intimate physician community. I am gonna show you how to rest and how to recharge. Let's transform your brain, level it up so that you can start to dream the life that you always wanted this year in 2023. I can't wait to learn all about what kind of year you're gonna have after this conference. Take care.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Beyond ADHD, a physician's perspective. I am Dr. Diana Mercado Marmarash. I'm a family medicine physician practicing in rural Texas. I used to be hindered by my ADHD, but I now see it as a gift that helps me show up as the person I was always meant to be, both in my work and in my personal life. In the past 2 years, I've come to realize that unlearning some of my beliefs and some of my habits were just as important as learning the new set of skills. Oh my goodness, I am so excited today. I have an amazing treat. New year, new goals, right? So I have a really good friend of mine here. It's really, really so important to have him here. He's been one of my guest coaches, and it's been a treat, and my group went wild when we had him. He is actually a lawyer, and his name is I'm so used to saying doctor, right? But he is our honorary doctor in our group. Okay. So Marshall Lynchy, and I might have misspelled that or missed that, but he's here and he will tell us all about himself. And he actually has ADHD and he coaches lawyers with ADHD. What an amazing service that is. And he has his podcast and he's just changing the world on his end. And so I'm so happy to have him here today. Marshall, would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, you bet. I'm Marshall Lichty. And yeah, I'm a lawyer, a juris doctor, which, the JD doesn't quite have the same ring that the MD does. I practiced law. I do no real lawyering these days, but I practiced law for about 15 years. And I was 43 when I was diagnosed with ADHD. For a lot of folks, it will resonate with them that I had a kiddo who was having some struggles in school. And we got curious about it and brought him to a specialist. Doctor diagnosed him. And as we were sitting in that meeting room, the doctor says, kind of looks at my wife and says, "Now, is there anybody else in the family that, you know, that has any of these characteristics?" And all the heads snap over to me. And then I did some assessment. I did a full-on assessment. I did the whole nine yards and got a diagnosis. And my life has been very, very different ever since then, in almost all good ways at the end of the day.
Tell me, when you look back and they were asking you those questions, could you see all those characteristics in yourself as a kid, as a high school and college? Like, could you see any of those things? What stood out to you?
I think I was talking about this with a client of mine yesterday. If you're the mango juice and you're trying to read the label, you have a hard time doing it because you can't see the label. You're inside the bottle. And I think there were some elements of it that I saw plain as day, right? But some of them, I just didn't really see them, or I didn't know what I didn't know. And it was kind of as diagnosticians, anybody who has a clinical practice knows that there's a gaping difference between somebody who really has thought about what they might have, and they've been on the internet, and they might be, self-diagnosing a bunch of stuff, but they've been in the symptoms, they've been in the differential diagnosis, and they know what to play with. So that it kind of makes your job easier. sure, you got to talk them down from having cancer, but at least they have talked about, you know, well, I have this and I have this and I have this and I have this. And they can talk about it in a way that shows that there's been some self-reflection. And for me, that was the most interesting part, was watching my son go through it led to this process of self-reflection, talking to my spouse about it, and then doing all of the research and looking for resources. And that's when I realized that there were no meaningful resources for lawyers with ADHD. And as I started thinking about what all of the implications of executive function challenges would be for a lawyer, I was gobsmacked. I was like, well, I mean, this is a huge, huge challenge for lawyers, because our jobs in many ways are just dripping with executive function. And so I found very quickly that that there was a big need for what I was going through myself. Great fortune of writing a book with some friends about how to run a small law firm. And the book did well, and we believed it. It's a good book. I believe the stuff in there, but I owned a small law firm and I had a really, really hard time implementing some of the things that we had written in the book. And finally, it kind of started to make sense to me where those struggles were. It wasn't that I was lazy or crazy or stupid or, you know, any of those things. The places where I struggled were reflected in some patterns that I was then able to see. Medication made a difference. Tools and tips and hacks and tricks made a big difference. And so starting to view my life as the search for healthy dopamine and healthy neurotransmitter processing has become a real joy for me. Sometimes augmented, but not sometimes, every day augmented by controlled substances, but also augmented by exercise and meditation and planning and sleep and a whole bunch of other things. And with those things, I feel like I've honestly never been in a better spot professionally. So it has been a huge, huge blessing for me.
Yeah. And probably personally too, right? Because now, like you said, now you're choosing meditation. Now you're choosing, I don't know if you're exercising or not, but now you're at least more conscious that there is, like you said, a dopamine menu you can tap into whenever you need it, versus before, maybe we didn't even have that awareness and we were going to go get that sugar or that drink after work or whatever, because we didn't realize that that was going to motivate us or keep us, push us through the deadline that we needed to commit to. And unaware of that, sometimes we could have been self-judging, right? Or we could have been like, oh my God, I'm trying to lose weight, but I keep going to go get the cookie at 3 p.m. Like, who am I, right? And like all this shame that can sometimes keep us from growing or becoming or reaching all those damn goals that we keep making. And like, we don't really follow through because we didn't know, we didn't have the tools to be able to follow through, or we keep trying to do things the way, like you said, it works for everybody else. Like, this is great.
That's right.
Checklist for A, B, and C. And if you don't have ADHD to do, and it works beautiful, but we forget that with ADHD, what really drives us or passion really kind of trumps sometimes, although we do need that somebody to help us be organized and help us with some of the checklists that we ourselves on purpose thinks are needed, right? Because there's certain things you can't ignore that are needed to in order to be able to do. Like if you have you had a client and you knew that their case was, you know, on Monday at 3 p.m., like you couldn't show up on Monday at 4 p.m. because then you kind of missed that window. There was no window of like, oh, well, I had it on the wrong time. Like, and so maybe at 2 p.m. had somebody told you, okay, Marshall, are you in your car? Are you driving towards whatever? And it sounds silly, right? But our brain wouldn't have given us the opportunity. We would have literally want to be driving out of our thing at 2:50, thinking we're going to get there by 3 and like have plenty of time and have the, you know, the parking space and everything, right? And aware that, oh God, we want to keep doing things until the last minute because our brain is just wired that way.
That's right. Yeah. The classic time optimism. I love the phrase time optimism because it puts a little spin on that predicament that we get ourselves into. You know, one of the things that I've really been thinking a lot about lately in the context of ADHD for adults who are diagnosed later is, and I haven't seen medical research on it, certainly not peer reviewed. And so this is anecdotal, it's observational, but I am fascinated by what I believe to be really significant parallels between people who are late diagnosed with ADHD, usually smart people with high IQs who are late diagnosed, and the CPTSD literature. I'm fascinated by complex PTSD as a, I don't know what it is, whether it's a there is a lens through which you can look at either one of these and see a ton of parallels. And while I know that they are separate, what I have begun to wonder about is whether there are elements of ADHD that increase perhaps dramatically the likelihood of a young person having an experience with parents during attachment that leads to CPTSD. Fascinating thing for me to play with and think about. And so I want to say it to this group because it's just something that I've been chewing on. And I know that there are legitimate doctors in this group who are capable of thinking about this at a higher level. For me, it's a curiosity. It's something that I've been playing with. I've been trying to kind of read and research. But I think there are so many interesting elements of having ADHD and beginning to work on that shame cycle that you mentioned. That is as much of the work as anything. Right.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways that people work through CPTSD, they are very similar to what we talk about, at least the emotional aspects of working through ADHD. So anyway, I don't know what thoughts you have about it, if any, but that's something I've thought a lot about, as you mentioned, shame.
Yeah. And so I think that's such an important topic that you pointed out to. You know, I just interviewed a physician. She's wonderful. And she has like 10,000 certificates. Like, she's family medicine, she's like psychiatrist, functional medicine, Reiki. And she actually, interestingly enough, her area of interest is addiction medicine. And she talks about this correlation of trauma and you know, and so I think you're onto something, because me and her had a discussion. And of course, we had the discussion after I stopped recording. I was like, God damn it, we should have recorded that. But that brings it up to the fact that I was talking to her, realizing that, you know, most of our experiences up to the age of 7, like, really shape us into how we react with the rest of the world going forward, right? And so I was telling her that, you know, I grew up in Mexico till I was 10. And then not until I came over here, all of a sudden, like, I was meant to do certain things in a certain way. And them calling my parents was not enough. It meant that my mom had to come and sit there physically for me to behave, right? And again, it was not because I wasn't doing my work, because they would give me work and then they would give me more work and I would do all that work. And you could see that my mom sitting there did not keep me from not asking questions or being disruptive, right? And so then they had to bring my dad in to do that, right? And so how she was talking about how that must have been traumatic for me to not be myself, right? Because my dad would have probably spanked me, because, you know, my dad, like, you're pulling him out of work. Like, this means money. This means like livelihood, right? And how like.
Now, if y'all are listening right now, you're hearing a catch in that sonorous voice over there. We are talking about.
So the well-meaning, right? Like, well-meaning, well-intentioned, this is how teachers were taught they needed to do that, right? And we were talking a conversation earlier, you and me, about how I'm in a place in my life where really rethinking, how can we help a society, like, well-meaning, like, how can we make laws to where everybody is so inclusional? So instead of making it obvious that your kid has ADHD, how can we bring in tools and be like, hey, in the front of the class, here's all these gadgets that can help you, like, to concentrate. If you can use them, like, quietly under your desk, and it's not distracting you, but they're using you to get you to still pay attention, but it's kind of like a side thing in the back. And then anybody in the class class can go and grab it. Now is you're not self-identifying you as ADHD. Only the people with ADHD can have this gadget to help them concentrate. But anybody in the classroom can use this tool as if it's a tool. And if it's no longer a tool, then you take it away because now it is distracting, right? Like teaching people tools, right? Or how can I have those timers that are visual timers so that when you just say 5 minutes are up, people don't know what 5 minutes are. But if they have a clock that says, oh, 5 minutes, and you can see the little red, and then you're like, oh, okay, closer. And then because of 5 minutes, you implement it where then you turn around and you tell, hey, okay, this is a time where your friend next to you can tell you, did you catch the assignment? Can we share each other? Can you group, instead of, again, making it seem like, oh, you're the only one that didn't catch it because you were so distracted in your dreams. Like now you're working as a team. Everybody works together. You're not making it mean a thing that you're asking questions, right? So why is that stemming from that? Now I can go back and see like, well, it was traumatic to have my dad sitting right next to me. And like, I'm fearing for my life. Obviously, that's not my life. But in my mind, I'm fearing for my life to be embarrassed, right, to be spanked out of here in front of everybody, right?
Or so you disappoint, right? I mean, realistically, that's what we're talking about at the end of the day. And I think you touched on some really interesting stuff there. The first one that I'll mention just on the side is that timer that you're talking about. The product is called a time timer. Yeah. You can get it on Amazon. They have it in different colors. It's a whole thing. And they're great. It works well for my kids. I had a client last week hold one up. He's like, I got a new time timer for Christmas from my in-laws. And I've been using it, and it actually helps with Pomodoros or with other, you know, tactics to stand tasks. So yes, time timer. But the other thing that I want to mention, this is one of the reasons that you and I connected and immediately felt like kindred spirits, was because your vision aligns with mine, which is to see that two things are true. First, your parents were doing their best.
Exactly.
And their best probably led to some really tough experiences for you that you're probably still scarred by, working through.
Yeah.
The same is true for your teachers. They were doing their best. The opportunity that we have is to talk about ADHD in a different way, to empower people, to educate folks, parents and teachers and coworkers and partners in our medical practices and things of that sort, which is why I think it brings us around to something that you and I talked about before we started recording, which was, I think that ADHD accommodations are accommodations that in general are great for everyone. So for example, in your personal practice, you now have scribes available to all of the physicians in your group.
Yes.
That began as a need that you had for executive function, for order, for capturing notes. And you are out and about. Anybody who's listening to your podcast knows that you are out with being ADHD and talking about it. You've got a podcast and group coaching available, a great value, by the way, for anybody's, right? Like, you're doing the thing. So it would be bizarre to not be sort of coming out at work about your ADHD, but there are a lot of people who are not fortunate or not so bold or not so confident that they're not going to see ramifications at work. And for them, if they have ADHD, but it's on the down low, you've made the world better. But guess what? Even better, and this goes back to your point about being a student in a classroom with a teacher who is aware of the benefit of fidgets and distractions, now we get to have scribes in your practice, and all 10 physicians benefit dramatically, which means your patients benefit dramatically. And it's all because we made the world a little bit better for one person who had ADHD. And I think that is beautiful. Now, like I said, you volunteered to say, I have ADHD. But in a practice where people want to be accommodating, where we want to have our diversity and inclusion efforts front and center, we need to be thinking about what it looks like to do DEI for folks with neurodiverse brains. And feels like there's resistance to it. The fact of the matter is, most interventions and accommodations for people with ADHD help everybody. So I love that. I love that you did it. I love that your work is now at least in part built around coaching people to understand that in the medical profession, because that is just an absolute force multiplier to have physicians on the front line, of course, working on their own ADHD or the ADHD that their kids have.
Right.
Now they're sitting in clinic and they can talk to people about what this looks like. They can be advocating for accommodations in their practices, not because they think anybody else has ADHD, but for their benefit. So I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was such an empowering thing that you said yes to like this complete stranger to be like, hey, do you want a conversation with me about ADHD? And do you want to come and coach my group? Like, it was such a benefit for the physicians to be able to hear your side and to be able to hear, you know, that if you don't feel like you want to say you have ADHD, like you don't have to, and that's okay, but you can still show up and tell them, I work best when blah, 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 blah. When like I have my own nurse, when I am not moved from like this room to that room to that room. Like you just keep me in these two rooms, when I am next to a window, when I have the ability to use my headphones and nobody's talking to me. Like it sounds silly, but we sometimes when we are employed by somebody else, we feel like, oh, I just have to follow all the rules. This is the way it's always been. I don't want my job at jeopardy. I'm on the fine line because I keep getting those damn emails that I haven't closed my notes and I can't ask for, how dare I ask for something for me to help me to do what they want me to do? Like, you know, and so I thought it was so good that you shared that piece of advice from it. And I know you weren't doing it for everybody, and everybody's own case is their case. Just like when we say from, you know, we're not giving medical advice, we're not giving legal advice here, but it's good to at least have a general understanding of how you can still empower yourself to ask for things. And look, it took 3 years of me asking for scribes. It's not like it happened overnight, and it's not like it's going to happen. But at the end of the day, you had to realize how much does it take us to replace us. And to replace a physician can take anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million a year just to replace you, depending on what you do. And so if you could say, I work best when I have learners and I love to teach medical students, that's what I want. Or I work best when I don't have learners and I don't want to teach medical students. I just want to do surgeries and this is my area. Or I work, like, how wonderful would it be that every time you show up and you do what are your strengths and you feel so aligned, like, everybody benefits, like it's just a ripple effect instead of being like, yeah, no, that's not possible. And ours are virtual scribes. They're not even in the room. Like, right? How amazing is that?
Right. Listen, one of the things that I think is absolutely critical about this part of the discussion. So first of all, let me back up. I want a little bit of credibility in the room. So when I was a lawyer in my first job, the first seven-ish years of my legal career was representing doctors in medical malpractice lawsuits. I then spent 3 years suing doctors in medical malpractice lawsuits. So I have a lot of experience with what it looks like for doctors to do well, for them to chart well, for them to follow on patients well, for them to do the things that not only provide great patient care, but keep them out of trouble. That has me thinking very often, weirdly often, about the struggles that doctors have when they have ADHD. And the point that I think is critical, listen, the medical profession is not one where you go blasting from the rooftops that you've got ADHD, that you've got depression, that you've got anxiety, that you've got a substance abuse problem, that you made a mistake, that you think you possibly might have potentially made a mistake. It is no place for that. We're trying to change that. And I think there's interesting movement around that. But we all know the stigma around not being perfect in medicine. The idea that we would be suggesting that you're going to march into your clinic or march into the hospital or march into your patients and say, hey, guess who's got ADHD over here? Nobody knows what it means. There are a ton of misconceptions about what that is. You will lose your practice. You will lose your patients. I don't think that's exactly true, but there is certainly that perception and there's certainly that fear. And so the point the doctor's making is, how do we try to have a different relationship with our lives and our practice in a way that doesn't threaten our livelihood? And so that point about having a strengths-based approach to navigating your practice is, I think, the quintessential one. We want to talk about takeaways. We want to talk about tips and hacks and tricks and all that shit to navigate ADHD as a doctor in practice. I think this is it. You cannot lead a strengths-based life if you don't reflect on your strengths. This is the time of year when I spend time with clients, obscene amounts of time with clients, trying to planning our years, planning our quarters, planning our months, planning our weeks, planning our days, learning new habits, using new software, using new tools and templates and new workbooks and all kinds of, everybody's out there buying their brand new planners and all this shit. There is a belief that we can change by just looking forward at what we want. If you are in a position where you are struggling, the single best thing that I can believe, that I believe that you can do, is start working on giving yourself permission to every day, if possible, reflecting on what it is like to be you. Well, that didn't go very well. That went great. I loved that. I hated that. That was a great piece of music I listened to on my commute while I was late. That was a great piece of art I saw. Man, did I hate that patient. Boy, I never want to talk about gout again. That is the worst thing on the planet. These are things that benefit us because as we reflect and we give ourselves permission to not be doing something, to not be putting out a fire, to not be feeling guilty that we didn't close our note, be like, I don't have time to reflect. I have to go close the note. I don't have time to plan. I have to go see the next patient. I don't have time to plan. I have to throw my scrubs in the laundry. The point is we don't give ourselves permission to do things that we know will benefit us. And if you can start today carving out just a little bit of time to reflect on yesterday, on last week, on last month, on last quarter, on last year, that gives you a relationship with what you like, what you don't like, what you're good at, what you're not good at. And that is what allows you to then go use a strengths-based approach when you're asking for accommodations. It is not my expectation that you're going to march into one of your partner's offices and say, gee, I need scribes in the office because I work better with scribes. If you can look back at the last year and say, every single time that I get in trouble here, when I get behind, when I get anxious, when I miss things, when my patients are upset, when we get fiery emails from, you know, other providers, it is because of things that a scribe could fix. I don't want that anymore. I want this practice to be better. I am at my best when I can have those things taken care of so I can put my big, huge ass, powerful brain to work on solving real health problems. That message is going to resonate every single time. But it's only through reflection and retrospective that you're able to talk about that in any meaningful way. And so really, as we enter 2023, if I can encourage you to give yourself one gift this year, it is find time, hopefully every day, even if it is just a little teeny tiny bit of time. This is not a woo-woo gratitude journal. It's not Brené Brown. God bless her soul. I love her. It's not Glennon Doyle. Think about how it went. Observe what you liked and didn't like, what would be better, what would be less good, and hold that, and then do it again tomorrow. And by the end of the year, you're going to know a lot more about yourself, and I guarantee you that that will lead to good change.
Yeah, like that's such an amazing, powerful thing. Like you said, it seems like we keep telling ourselves we don't have enough time, but if on purpose, like growth is optional. Like growth is intentional. Like you on purpose have to reflect so that you can see, yes, this worked, this does not work. And it's so simple. And it seems like, why would I want to pay anybody to tell me that? Because again, it's so simple, but it's in the accountability and in the implementation and in seeing what it's doing for everybody else around you who this is now the community that you're on purpose signing yourself up to be in. So like, I'm sure that's why your clients are kicking ass now because they're coming and you're having that one-on-one or that group coaching with you to be able to do that. And it's simple, so simple that we're like, we'll do it tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow. And then tomorrow never comes. And then you wonder why you're still in the same damn horse race that has nothing's changed, although you had the best intention at the beginning of the year or the beginning of the month, or you name it. Every Monday you start to say you're going to work out, right? But someday is not a day in the calendar. Like you really have to give yourself 5 minutes. And it sounds silly that I'm asking you to do 5 minutes, but oh my God, the five magical minutes make a difference. If you wake up with the intention of like, what am I doing today for 5 minutes, like on purpose, what is my fun? What is my priority? Is my priority to go pick up my kid so I can see him at the soccer practice? Is my priority to close my notes? Is my priority to not miss my doctor's appointment? Like it sounds silly, but if your priority is like, to do that, then at the end of the day, if you just spend another 5 minutes, did I do my priority? Why or why not? Right?
I love that. Yep. I think that is a beautiful loop that is virtuous in that if you can, you know, and you do your 5 minutes, I'm sure that you've mentioned that on the podcast and to others before, for me, when we talk about habit formation, when we talk about, you know, putting things into our subconscious, I don't care if it's five, honestly, you get credit for starting if you even think about doing it today, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, if you can do 5 minutes, that's great. And if you can do 5 minutes in the morning planning and setting intentions, and if you can do 5 minutes in the evening doing retrospectives and reflecting, great. That seems like a wonderful virtuous cycle. But if you can spend 5 seconds in the morning with one priority, and if you can spend 5 seconds in the evening with one reflection, that is a win. We are busy. There is not enough time. And the only way that we change that is by setting different priorities. And that is a message that I hear loud and clear from you. It doesn't mean that you need to put all of the other priorities that are crowding in on you to the side. What it means is you can carve out, and this is like the pleas from whatever it is, the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation or whatever. Say, you know, for the price of a cup of coffee, you can, and that's what we're talking about. For the amount of time that it takes you to open Insta and scroll through the first 4 posts, you can also do a little bit of reflection or a little bit of intention setting. And if you give yourself permission to do that, not to stop looking at Insta or TikTok, but instead to say, I'm going to spend 5 seconds beforehand just doing a quick reflection. Now we're talking. So anyway, we got a little bit down a rabbit hole there, but I think it's,
But it's a useful tool or that obviously
you can do today. Don't have to plan your year. You don't have to talk about 2023. You don't have to talk about your 5-year life plan. You can do that fucking today. You can do it right now. In fact, I have an idea, doctor, with your permission. I'm not trying to hijack your podcast, but what if we shut the hell up for a minute, you and I,
yeah,
you give a little direction to your people about what they might do. And maybe we have them set their intention, because for you and I, it's the morning. I don't know when people are listening to it, but what if we have them take a little bit, 5 seconds, 10 seconds to reflect on yesterday and a little bit of time to set an intention for today. And then we just make them do it, not make them, whatever.
We encourage them to, we offer them the space too.
That's right. The margin. Yes. So I don't know your show, but
well, I mean, they're already listening to us. So, you know, why not now give yourself the gift of those 5 seconds? So we'll both be quiet for 5 seconds to let you think of what your priority is for today.
All right. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do 1 5-second for intentional priority setting. Pick one priority and say it to yourself out loud. If you're in the car, if you're in the subway, if you're listening to this in a group and there are 1,000 people in the waiting room waiting for you, say it out loud what your intention is. Then we're going to interrupt you to tell you that it's 5 seconds. And then we're going to tell you to do another 5 seconds. And this one will be to reflect on some period of time, whether it was earlier today or yesterday or last week, and find one thing that you can observe that you liked, that you hated, that you were good at, that you weren't good at. All right. Okay, doctor, you're up. All right, I got one. I'm going to put my groceries away before my next call.
Well, my 5 seconds was I'm going to be on time for my appointment for my massage. That was my priority for today.
Self-care and being on time. Damn, that's next level. All right, should we do 5 more seconds and do a little reflection? All right, here we go. All right, what do you got, doctor?
Well, I'm smiling because yesterday, you know, I finally had an amazing time with my kiddos painting. I didn't have my phone on me. I went and I left it to charge, and it was beautiful because I was not on call and I did not have my phone on me. You know, I've been working on being present when I am present and not just texting while I'm doing an activity.
I love that. Mine was, I've been talking a lot about goals with people, and I have a really tortured relationship with goals. And so I did some kind of frame shifting for people. And instead of goals, I was calling them very specific plans. And so I have this hashtag VSP that I've sort of just been like scratching out on stuff like VSP, VSP, VSP. If I want to get anything done, I need a VSP. And so this morning I didn't sleep well at all last night. So this morning I got up and I did a VSP for a project that I want to accomplish this year. I want to build a cedar strip canoe before the ice comes in next October. And I got a pretty good start on a VSP for my canoe building plan. And that was great. And so the reflection really is VSPs feel good. And normally I wouldn't give myself time to like think about that project and plan it out. But I did. And that's what I thought about in the five. Confession, it was probably a little bit longer than 5 seconds. Neither one of us actually had a clock on, but yes, that's what I did with my head.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Even though it seemed, we're not sure exactly what 5 seconds mean to either of us because we don't have the time awareness and we don't have a clock. And this was a totally spontaneous thing, but you quickly saw how it was not a whole minute and how it was plenty of time for you to give yourself that gift of just thinking through at the top of the mind without overthinking, without what came up. Like, and it didn't take that long for you to realize what came up, right? And if we just gift ourselves that gift of awareness, again, goes back to awareness, like what a difference it would be. I was just telling Marshall before we start, like, I'm so excited about my upcoming February schedule. Like, I've been toying with the idea of having more time to play. And it took me a year to like say, okay, I'm going to have Thursdays off. And so for a whole year, I had Thursdays off. And then I kept thinking, no, I want more. I want to play more. I want to play more. And so finally on Thursday, this past Thursday, I was like, you know what? I got it. I'm going to have Monday and Tuesday off. I'm going to find me a daycare where I can drop my kid off a little bit earlier. And they have flexibility where my hubby can pick up in the afternoon and then I don't have to feel like I have to rush out of clinic. I'm going to stretch my days, Monday and Tuesdays off, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is clinic. And then instead of being here and there on call, I'm just going to be on call Monday through Monday, but then that's it. The rest of the 3 weeks, I don't have to worry about having the phone attached to me so that I could actually be present with my family and not feel like I'm going to miss something important. And so it seemed like it was an instant thing. And then I talked to my manager on Friday and she's like, yeah, let's implement. It took years and me getting to the realization that, oh, I can have all the things. Oh, I can make containers so that I'm fully present wherever I'm at, wherever I'm at. But again, it took a community. It took self-reading books. It took reflection. It took asking me, what do I want despite? And me working through like, oh, what are people going to think? You're just working 3 days a week. I'm like, who gives a shit what I think? I care what I think. I care what I want. Right. And if I'm happy, it's so important. So anyways, I just love it.
That is such an incredible thing to share with. We are not talking about doing something overnight. We're not talking about waving a magic wand and all of a sudden being a different person. This is toil and pain and joy and suffering and glory and grit and all of it. And it doesn't happen overnight. But the message that I believe is real and true, and this is what I tell my lawyer clients all the time, ADHD brains in white collar professions will change the way that we work. We are creative. We see systems differently. We are entrepreneurs. We see change. We don't always know how to do it, but that's what other kinds of brains are for. And that's okay. We will change the profession, but we need to give ourselves space and time to do that. And hopefully the gift that you can give yourself today is the opportunity to set some intentions and the opportunity to reflect a little bit.
Brave to believe in what you need. You know, 4 out of the 6 physicians jumped on to this new way of doing it. They're all going to do it exactly the same. Some of them might be off, you know, Thursday, Friday. Some of them might be Tuesday, Thursday, but they're going to have 3 days a week. But you just don't know. I'm not doing it for them. But like you said, everybody benefits when you decide to show up for you and for yourself. And so like we're changing the culture of medicine where you can have all the things, where you can be who you want to be. But remember that you need to be around the community that's going to support you to do that. So of course, I know I could talk to you for tens of hours and it's going to be amazing.
Me too. It would be magnificent.
And so I definitely have to have you come back.
That's what I was just going to say.
But tell us, how can people, yeah, where can people find you? Because I know they have friends or who, you know, have lawyers who would benefit your service, or they have a spouse who has ADHD and is a lawyer. Where can they find you?
like a true ADHD, I have a pretty good website that isn't, you know, all the way done and perfect, but I would like it to be. It's at thejdhd.com, thejdhd, all one word, .com. And I have a podcast called JDHD. I haven't released an episode in forever and ever, and I have a bunch of shame about it, but there's some good stuff in there. Interviews with Ned Halliwell, who's a world famous ADHD physician. Gary Johnson, my personal psychologist, who is a friggin' genius when it comes to ADHD. So go listen to some podcast episodes if you're interested in it.
And I could totally share today's podcast and you can put it on there and we can relive it. And why totally. We're double, why right?
Why not? Doctor, as always, thank you. Please invite me back to the group. And if anybody's listening to the podcast and you want to chat, join the group and then I'll see you in the group.
One last question. I know you have to jump off. What do you hope to see yourself in the next 3 years for fun? One thing.
Oh, I'm going to build this canoe and then I'm going to paddle it around and I'm going to build a house on a river and I'm going to catch trout out of it. And it's going to be fucking amazing.
Awesome. Thank you for coming. It was a blast.
Adios. Thanks, doctor.
Thank you for spending your time with me. I really believe that time is your most valuable asset. Please subscribe to the podcast, share with your colleagues, and don't forget to check out my website at adhd-lifecoach.com, where you can find out about my upcoming coaching group classes, as well as free master classes and other exciting events that are happening.